straight out, you know. So I put the tree down. I haven't had a drop of liquor since I left Mexico. So man, maybe like the third of January. Maybe like, yeah, I would say maybe the third was like the last time, if not like before. Haven't touched tree since like 29th of December 2020. And I've just been up and at it, bro. 5:30 a.m. Just get to the gym. You know, try to put all my issues into my workout and kill that shit. It's been helping. It's been helping for sure. Yeah, bro. You know, how you been though? Everything good?
Oh man, just same thing, bro. Trying to get right.
You know, the situation right now. We all just kind of got to roll with the punches. Yeah, bro. You know?
Oh God, it's very interesting seeing who's able to adapt and who kind of gets, you know, like who can't really take it, you know. I be seeing a lot of cats just kind of crack. A lot of cats just crack under the pressure, you know. They just, you know, cats not able to socialize and operate the way they want, and you know, it's when it's something this big, and when it's this much bigger than like an individual, it really, it's a really good testing ground to prove your mettle and see how much abuse can you take, you know? Even though, you know, some might argue like the safety measures or like precautions are not abusive, you know? I think those that really value their freedom and their being autonomous really, really are being impacted by it right now.
I know
I miss fucking dancing. Fuck.
Man.
Oh, can we swear on here? My bad.
You said what? Oh, you good, bro.
Hey, can we cut on here?
No rules
on
this motherfucker. Ain't no rules on this motherfucker.
Okay, cool.
Yo, ass had a fucking, it's a Henny and a fucking, a blunt behind one ear and a blunt behind the other. You be straight.
Hey, that was me last year.
Sometimes this year, fuck.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It's not permanent. It's not permanent. Yeah,
yeah. You know, right now, I mean, what do we have to get fucked up for? You feel me? Discussions here with another episode, season 3. We are on season 3 already. And without further ado, my guest, Rourke, good friend from the city, Pasadena. Really, I'm from everywhere. Shit. This motherfucker's in LA, in Mexico at the top of the year, right?
Bryce gave an incredible introduction. You know, currently I'm a marketing rep at Sony Music, and I'm part of Party Next Door's day-to-day management team. I'm also a full-time student at Cal State Northridge, and you know, I'm just really out here operating and trying to make the most out of it and impact others as much as possible, you know, and leave a legacy right now.
Bro, I didn't even know
y'all
went to Saint Monica.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, you ain't remember me?
Yeah.
Man, what was that? That was
for me,
bro.
For
easily,
me, you got to understand.
Easily like sixth grade, bro.
Yeah. I remember some little shit, but the hardest thing for me, my memory, is remembering faces and names. Because I'll see somebody on the street that I don't even fucking know. Be like, damn, do I know that motherfucker from somewhere? I'll be like, nah, I'm tripping. Fuck out of here. But that's just, I mean, my memory is all fucked up. I'm terrible with names, all that. But I remember you from high school because your ass used to be at the parties. And that's the only time I see you, or at a football
game.
And we walk up, your ass would walk up
games,
with energy. What? I'm like, oh, it's my nigga Roar. Because all you know, we only saw each other about shit.
I've been known you, bro, and check it out. So I play ball with I'm the year tops. But man, I went to high school with Eddie Gonzalez, who went to Odyssey. You know, that's still my dog. Mm-hmm. That's still my dog. And you know, I played ball with Brandon Mulligan. So you know, like it's all love. You know, I was never really like a full like entrenched like Pasadena kid, but I still claim that shit just because of. You know, just playing brotherhood and, you know, doing running around with the, like, Pasadena flag football leagues and doing all that shit, man. Like, that's my city, bro. That's really, like, that's, you know, I don't really claim L.A. You know, I claim L.A. if I'm international, somebody asks me. But if somebody's, like, from the city and they ask me where I stay at, I'm a Pasadena kid. And I say it just like that. Oh, God. Yeah, I love this place.
That's just the environment and what Pasadena
you know,
like you could live in La Cunada, you could live shit right up the hill in fucking Santa Clarita, but if you stop, if like you have any type of connection to Pasadena, you gonna feel that shit, right? And that shit just gonna stick with you.
Yeah,
and you just hear Pasadena and you like, what the fuck talking about Pasadena? Like,
yeah, we talking about my shit. Be like
every
that.
Every time.
Yeah, for real.
Really, Pasadena has grown on the map because, I mean, when we were younger, it was just, I mean, if you're around it, then yeah, you know what Pasadena is.
But yep. Then,
now, I remember being in fucking Colorado, bro. And somebody be like, oh, you from Pasadena? Whoop-de-whoop, I know this person that lived there. I'm like.
Yep, it be like that, bro. And now we got right? all these cats that we grew up with that is in the league and shit, like.
Mm-hmm. So right now, working with Sony.
Yep.
CSUN, right? What are you studying? Yes, sir. CSUN?
I'm a comms major. I switched from business admin to comms before I transferred from Glendale College. It's probably the best decision I made academically for myself. Because it was such a good fit. And, you know, as soon as I did that, everything kind of aligned. No regrets. I wish I could have some classes in person, but, you know, it's cool. You know, it's nice not to have to commute and, you know, you make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said, you also mentioned working with Party Next Doors. What was that? What was that about? I missed it.
Yeah, no problem. So Sturdy Co. is the company that manages Party Next Door. Tyler Henry is the CEO of the company, and he is Party Next Door's personal manager. The division I'm a part of under Sturdy Co. is his day-to-day team. So, you know, whatever it be, it could be, you know, Party Next Door needs alcohol. I go buy cases of Casamigos. Cases.
You know exactly which one. You heard that?
Oh yeah. Cases of Casamigos. Man, me and All-Star Liquor Store are best friends now, you know, because part of my whole thing is like using the awareness. You know, I really be trying to take the money and really give it back and you know, contribute to the people that kind of, you know, influence my upbringing. And you know, All-Star Liquor Store was one of those places that we all went to, you know. So
that's the spot that used to sell us. That's the spot that used to sell us the tobacco when we was underage on the low.
Yo, we had the Hey Misters out front that would just go get us our little 40s and shit. You know, that's what it really be for me. So you know, just like matter of fact, I was just for the fight on Saturday. I went and bought fucking $2,000 worth of Casamigos from them. You know, it'd be little things like that I actively implement, you know, or another example is like they'll hear me say they'll bohemian and say, like, Party needs his penthouse in downtown L.A. cleaned. I contact a house cleaning company. You know, they little Spanish lady over. She cleans the crib. You know, hit me. Give me your personal number. And fuck the company. You know, I ain't going to let anybody just, like, hustle you out of your money. Like, fuck it. So I hit her personally every time now. You know? Nah, fuck the middleman, you know? Exactly. And that's really what I'm about, you know? Because Nip raised me, you know? Nip, Dom, YG, those cats really raised me. So, and especially now, like, you know, Nip is such an impactful part of my life where I'm really trying to implement him in every single facet of my life. So it'd be the small things that I try to do like that I feel like are one, living up to, like, his vision and also are kind of true to myself and my authenticity.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I hear that, and I connected that without a doubt, because, after he passed, it was just like, I think a lot of us that grew up on him kind of just had that feeling like, all right, am I really doing enough? Am I really maximizing my potential? Am I really, you know, going out to get it like he says you should, right? So,
man, I really had a fucking breakdown, you know? I really had a, like, I couldn't operate for like a whole fucking week, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that shit, honestly, RIP Kobe, but Nip shit really hit me hard, you know? Like, because I'd been interning, you know, I interned for Mike and Keys and 1500 and nothing. I was really going, and I was really trying to meet that dude, not as a fan. I was trying to meet him as, like, you know, as a peer, you know? I was trying to be like, look, I'm in this industry, you in this industry, like, you know, it's a pleasure to meet you instead of just being on some fanboy shit. But, you know, it never worked out. But, you know, it's, you know, now, you know, I'm tapped in with Rimpaw, tapped in with Rallo Styles, you know, got my producer in with them, fucking met Conrad from the Av, who made Vintage and Adventurous just last week. So, you know, we just fucking, my producer has a song out with Lil Cotty PGE. So, you know, we really going to bat for the home team. And those are my personal projects outside of the Sony and Party Next Door shit, because the West Coast shit is really important to me, especially, when it has a message like Nip's, music did.
Absolutely. And then with Lil Cotty, I mean, he was the one on that Mailbox Money mixtape, right? And he was the one,
yep.
It's kind of dope, yep, to see that getting paid.
He's the
forward
kid freestyling at the end of Status Symbol.
Exactly. So now it's dope to see that he's.
Yeah.
You wanted to meet Nip, and then, in my eyes, I see the whole opportunity of, okay, maybe you miss seeing Nip, but you also get to work with something that's really his. You know what I'm saying? His work. He put his mentorship into that kid, right? Like, so
yeah,
you still get
that's
to be
kinda,
around
really
him
it.
Without being around his body, you feel me?
Right. And Cotty gives off a vibe like Nip's, low key. Like, he you can tell that he was touched by Nip just based off of, like, the way dude articulates himself and the way bro operates is kind of very it's more wise than his age would have you thinking, you know? He moves, the way Cotty moves is cool, you know? And yeah, exactly like you said, like, though I couldn't get to work with Nip, or I couldn't get to meet Nip, or, you know, tell him thank you or whatever, it's the way I see it is Nip was such a mastermind, like, and a visionary, like, everybody that he even collaborated with is someone of a high standing in my head, you know, from fucking K-Camp to fucking James Fauntleroy to The Dream. It don't matter. I think he was so accurate with who he wanted to be around and who he wanted to make music with, that all those people are fair game for me, you know, and it would be an honor and a pleasure to be of those.
You could tell with the features that he brought on, he wasn't bringing on niggas that were popping at the moment. Like, a lot of niggas would bring on somebody onto their shit, and it's just because that motherfucker's hot at the
right
moment, right? Nipsey gonna bring on whoever he
feels
fits the record. And at the same time, I can probably guarantee that he co-signed that motherfucker's music, but also co-signed that person as a person. You feel me? He really did, like, he didn't fuck with nobody that was not authentic. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
right. That's exactly my point.
Exactly. I think that's something that we can really all, without a doubt, guarantee. He's not going to have no fake shit, no funny shit, no fugazi shit around him. He's going to keep it 100 and make sure everything around him is.
Yeah, I'll talk. That's how I try to live my life too. And it's hard, you know, because I be having to deal with like label politics, and or I have to deal with like, you know, I have to also play my role, right? So it's hard to say fuck the middleman. It's a balance act, you know, trying to say fuck the middleman and trying to do your own shit and trying to be autonomous, and then also having to play your role and stay down and you know, you can't be bigger than the program, you know, and that's something I grapple with on the daily. But you know, my time will come, and that's just something, you know, you gotta live with.
Right. You can't you don't know what it's like to succeed until you learn how to struggle and fail and be hungry, starve for it. You know what I'm saying? So
for real.
So let's move on. Let's talk about this. You've been following the NBA season at all?
Yeah, a little. Not as much as I used to. You know, I'm not gonna lie. Like I do see it. I saw how the fucking Sixers beat us by 1 point. That was kind of weird.
Shit, man. There's one story that has affected the NBA as a whole, right? And I think you might know where I'm going with it, but bear with me, okay? This is all fucking domino effect. So the NBA, in my eyes, become the most dramatic league in the fucking world, all right? Every day, we got a player complaining about some shit or fucking pouting or saying, I'm not playing today or whatever the fucking case is, right?
Yeah, I agree.
This shit all started off with James Harden. What was it, a few weeks ago, a month ago, whatever. He wanted out of the Rockets, right? They got rid of Westbrook, brought in John Wall. He still doesn't want to fucking be there. Motherfucker rocks a fat suit to the game.
Yeah.
Motherfucker look like he's 250 out at warm-ups and shit. They finally trade his ass. Once he gets traded, he goes over to the Nets, right? Joins Durant, joins Kyrie Irving. They sent Westbrook to the Wizards, right, to get John Wall for the Rockets. That ends up affecting, what was it, 3 days ago, fucking Bradley Beal and Westbrook are on the same team now, right? They come to play the Rockets with only John Wall. When I tell you, Westbrook and John Wall were, you know, going back at it, shit talking, you know, as you would in competition. Bradley Beal is standing in the back like your homie,
right,
club in the corner, making sure that nothing pops off too crazy. This motherfucker is staring down Westbrook, who's on his team now, and dapping up John Wall. So then that's a whole fucked up situation, right? Then Bradley Beal goes, he's scoring fucking 50 points a game, as you do, by himself, but losing games. So he's pissed off. And then with all that being said, this shit has affected the Rockets, the Nets, and the Wizards from one player, right? From one player. So my question is, with the year anniversary of Kobe passing, what would he have to say about the way that the NBA is being handled and how players are handling situations within their organization, or shit, even outside of their organization?
It's a great question. I think, you know, I really, you know, we was really raised off Kobe, you know, we really studied everything he did on and off the court. And, you know, Kobe's You know, KG is my favorite basketball player, but Kobe Bryant is my favorite human. But Kobe Bryant wasn't perfect, you know. There's a video in 07 of him saying, ship Andrew Bynum's ass out. I remember watching that video.
That's right.
And Kobe came on Stephen A. Smith and was talking about how he was unsatisfied with the organization, you know? And from 05 to 07, Kobe was unhappy until they got Powell. And I know this because I was there, my eyes glued to the fucking television screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's always a delicate dance between, you know, high profile players and the organization. I think it's imperative that, you know, both of them have an understanding behind closed doors and, you know, it has to be an understanding, and it has to be a strong enough understanding where both can leave and do their own respective jobs. You know, Kobe was going out there and busting people's asses and still losing, you know, wasn't making it past the first round. You know, the Suns or the Spurs kept dogging them. So, you know, he was doing his job as far as he and I was concerned, he was doing his job. And then, you know, finally Mitch made the trade and shipped Kwame Brown for Pau Gasol, and you know, the rest is history, and they went on to win two chips, and you know, it was cool.
The difference between that is, okay, we had LeBron do the same thing, right? He wasn't happy with what his team was doing. So he asked for players. That's the key LeBron. If you know you have LeBron on your team, you know he has the power to say, okay, I want him, bring him over, da-da-da-da-da, right? LeBron tries to tailor the team, right? Then you have Harden, who's probably has a mentality of, I can probably do this on my own. So put me somewhere and I'm going to make it happen. I'm just tired of being here, right? Now the thing, you said Kobe, throughout, what was it, 19 years, right? He had all those ups and downs.
20 years,
right? Ups and downs, right? Not once did he ask to leave. And once did he ask for somebody to come and join him. I actually remember watching an interview where Kobe said, he said, whoever the fuck I got on the court, we're going to make it happen, right? I'm not going to try and go and get somebody else. I'm not going to try and, you know what I'm saying? He's like, whatever the fuck we got. Actually, talking about that season, I think the second season with Pau Gasol and all of them, right?
When they won against Orlando, season. Right? So that's like, yeah.
Exactly.
It's like 08, 09. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So right after going into that season, he was just like, he wasn't happy with the team he had. He didn't think he had a finals caliber team at all. But he held all of them to that standard, and he was just like, all right, look, yep, we're going to fucking do this. And some of them fucking hated him. Like, that's just the intensity that Kobe brought, yeah, you know? Like, him and Dwight Howard had their fucking situation. Fucking, who else did he fucking, who was it before Dwight Howard?
Oh, yeah. That was when they imploded.
Yeah.
Man, he had Steve, Dwight Howard.
Steve Nash.
Smush Paul. I mean, he had a gang of clowns on various teams, you know?
Exactly.
I remember
he never had to go to the media and beg for a better team. He just
played better. Kobe was built different, you know. Kobe came from a different era. You know, I think the thing with Harden is, you know, what it is like players nowadays, they leverage their celebrity way more than they did back then. You know, they leverage, you know, and it could be something as simple as just the type of women you see them with now. It's like, you know, all they need is a blue check and have a basketball team in their profile, and it's a wrap. You know, then they're not dating nobody regular. Like, So it just be the, I think social media has really raised everything up to like a microscopic level. So when James Harden comes in with a fat suit, but he still drops crazy numbers, can't really say much, you know, but at the same time, he knows who exactly he is and the value he brings. But at the same time, I think as far as I can remember, the last time Harden even made it to the finals was with OKC, right? When they got dusted by the Spurs.
Yep.
And he hasn't been, I don't even think he's been.
Westbrook.
Exactly. And I don't even think he's made it to the Western Conference Finals since, or any conference finals since.
Not with the Rockets. For sure, because
I don't even know if he will with the Nets.
I don't know. They looking pretty good. I will say that the Nets.
Yeah, I can see that.
When they put the idea out that Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving are gonna play on the same team, it was kind of like, "Fuck, these motherfuckers are gonna be dribbling all game. They're not gonna get no fucking shots up." But then I feel like Kevin Durant really is that fucking glue, though.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant is the one player in the league that can go to any system with any player and will fit right in and still be dominant as fuck. And I believe that, for real. I think Kevin Durant really is.
Yeah, he's pretty mutable, you know. He kind of he gets in how he fits in, you know. I don't think he too big for the program, you know. He really adaptable. Mm-hmm. He always been.
I think that year, you know? Those,
I mean,
years
his biggest
that...
struggles were when he was the number one option on Seattle.
Right. And I feel like those years with the Warriors really did make him better. So I feel like this year we're gonna see a Kevin Durant we have not seen. And then it's gonna be the question
that.
Of do we have LeBron or Kevin Durant as the best? 2 years from now, promise, that'll be the question. Because people have always been reluctant to bring Kevin Durant into the question or into the conversation, you know. All right, so we are both LA County natives, you know. Yep. Pasadena to be specific, but being in LA County. You grew up in LA County, you see everything around LA as LA, right? So we're not just restricting this to Midtown or West LA or East LA or, you know, we could, shit, you got all the way from top LA County to bottom LA County, you feel me? So what do you love the most about LA? I'm gonna ask you the general question first.
Yeah. That's such a tough one, bro.
I know.
You know, I think especially recently, I think it's been I think the culture is unmatched. You know, I think the culture is really something like, you know, like the weather, to say the weather would be too basic. I think it's more of like, you know, I think everybody, I feel like for the most part, you know, individuals are pretty sincere with how they're going to treat you, you know, if they, I think it's like this, you know, if somebody doesn't like you off the rip, and you know, if they're going to be cool pretty quickly.
Right. But now I get what you mean. LA is just like, I get what you mean, because what I was going to say about it is like, LA is just so, you get everything you need here, right? Like,
right.
If you want to get away and get some nature, you can go do that. You can go to Angeles National Forest, you could go to the beach, you could, right? And then on the other hand, you want to be fucking right in the middle of shit. LA has that. You can be right in the middle of whatever the fuck you want to be.
I agree, bro.
Right? And then
landscape is unmatched. Landscape is unmatched.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then, on the other hand, in terms of community, I could be with, you know, super high class, you know, celebrities, you know, the whole Hollywood fucking painted picture, right?
Right.
And then I could go be with my people, right? And I can be in a small community and it's just fucking holes in the wall restaurants and bomb ass food and fucking everybody's just on the street. Everybody knows each other. Like, there's just so many. LA goes from fucking left to right, then fucking bottom all the way to the top and back. So
yeah, for real,
everything accessible.
And you know, that's to add to that point. You know, I've been, you know, when it came to like for the music, right? I would go ahead of my producer and I'd go out and reach out to artists and you know. I've been going to like, and you can, you know, to add to the culture aspect, you know, when it comes to like going to various hoods and stuff in LA, my experience is like I don't even look black, but my whole thing is, you know, you approach someone's home with love and respect and you're transparent with those intentions, mm-hmm. and you only going to get that back. And, you know, I went to Inglewood to meet Ackwright. Last year, and it was for an album release party at the Level Up store on Centinella. You know, it's filled with bloods and people are blood walking and wheelchairs, like shit that real LA mm-hmm. culture shit that you only see in like music videos. And you know, I'm really there, odd person out wearing all black. I'm like the palest person there, but I'm not even really tripping, you know, because right. who the fuck, like I'm a guest. You know, and that's how I operated. You know, I'm not stepping out of line. I'm not attracting attention myself. I'm not attracting negative attention to myself. I'm just keeping it cool. You know, and I think for the most part, if that's understood for people that are out of towners or people that are not necessarily familiar with those areas, all you got to do is approach it like it's your own place. You know.
You know what that just reminded me of? Dom Kennedy, he said, don't come to LA rocking your chain like it's Miami. How's he wrap that shit up? He said, all I'm saying is don't come to LA rocking your chain like it's Miami. Like, basically, you can make the wrong turn and that shit get taken from you, right? Like,
oh, quit.
Know where you at. People love to come to LA. Just start driving around and shit till you end up on a corner and motherfuckers is looking at you like, who the fuck are you, right?
Right.
So that's just a PSA for anybody showing up in LA. Do not just have a tour guide with you. Have somebody that knows what the fuck they doing, because you will make the wrong turn and I promise you, you will not be happy about it, to say the least.
Right, and that's not to say, you know, you shouldn't be yourself in the city, but I think it's imperative to understand that you a fish out of water. You know,
and people gonna check their lens.
Oh yeah, and quick, mm-hmm. and they gonna be swift with whatever they need to do if they feel threatened. You know, and I would feel the same way if someone was on my property acting reckless. Right. You know, so you know, my whole thing is, you know, if you in Crenshaw, you in the Westmont district, you in Inglewood, you know, Compton. I feel like I personally, you know, I personally approach all those places with love and respect, but at the same time, I'm fully aware of where I'm at. I'm fully aware of you know, of anything that could happen. But at the same time, you know, it's all about the intention. And I think approaching those places just like you would your own home is critical to your safety and your ability to enjoy that place. Straight up.
Hell yeah. All right, so then, what's your favorite grub spot in L.A.? Where's the first place you're going if you're leaving the house right now and you hungry as shit?
Oh, my God.
That good meal. Let's say you just went to fucking Africa for a week and you like, second I touch down, I'm going to blank. What's that blank?
Oh, In-N-Out, bro. Come on, dog.
I hear you.
You know, if it's like that, and I'm landing at LAX,
and now it's right there. It's right there. Motherfuckers right on the way out.
but you know, if I'm in, it depends. You know, if I'm in, you know, if I want, you know, hey, I'm not gonna lie though. Something I need to say is like, I'm not an In-N-Out fries guy. Like, I'm at the point now. I don't even order the fries. I just get two double doubles. But on me, Jim's fries on Lincoln and Woodbury. Is my, I Guinea really fries, would go.
The seasoning, yo, salt the on seasoning?
Oh, and you shake that bag up.
Oh, boy. You get that grease on the bottom of that brown bag.
Critical.
Boy.
Crucial.
I seen somebody get smacked with that greasy brown bag. Bam, and all the fries came out that bitch. What?
That's my favorite fry spot in LA. You know, I haven't had better French fries than that place. Like, and the burgers ain't bad too. Like that place do work.
Dina got some spots in the cut.
Oh yeah.